You're listening to The Big Show with Patrick Dumas on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Tomorrow, the NFL Draft, round one begins. It'll be in Detroit, Michigan. It's the best offseason party I think you can have in any sports league. Can't wait for that to take place. But we're going to go a little around the NFL, see what everybody's doing ahead of the draft. And we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline for say, welcome to the Big Show Hour 4, live from the Doug Lacy's Basement Systems Downtown Studio. Crack Foundation, Boeing Foundation Walls. We have a simple, permanent solution to stabilize your foundation. Contact Basement Systems. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com. We go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, joined by Jordan DeJani, friend of the show, NFL writer for CBSSports.com. Jordan, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day and chatting some NFL storylines with me.
Pat, my man, what's going on? Thanks for having me on the show this morning.
No problem, brother. Let's talk about it. Is there a better off-season event in any sport period than the NFL draft? Like, the NFL treats their second season unlike any other, and they really put it all together tomorrow night, what we'll see in Detroit.
No, there is no such thing that rivals the NFL draft, and there's really no such thing as an NFL offseason, right? Whoever told you there was an offseason completely lied to you. The NFL draft is fascinating for several different reasons. One, it has really evolved into a legitimate party atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I can confirm this because Nashville, Tennessee, where I'm located, held the draft a few years ago, and it was one of the coolest events that I've ever seen. I've also attended the NFL draft in New York City as well. And mm-hmm. This is when the real fans come out, right? It's a real party atmosphere. But on top of that, I mean, this is where real contenders are built. The importance of the NFL draft cannot be overstated. And another reason I really like this event is because for those states where it's legal, it has really evolved into a legitimate gambling holiday as well. So it's really fun to see how sportsbooks handle different odds, different props, the line movement, things like that. It's all fascinating.
Yeah, I know that the NHL draft, they moved around markets forever. But, you know, as soon as the NFL made the decision to leave Radio City and go around to different markets around the league, like next year it's going to be at Lambeau Field in Green Bay. That's going to be such a cool atmosphere for sure. But this year, the Detroit Lion fans, they're going to put on a hell of a show for the NFL. But let's get to some of the big storylines right now. Quarterbacks are going to ultimately end up ruling Thursday. As many as six could end up going in round one, four potentially within the top six. Let's start with Caleb Williams. I don't think I've seen a top prospect, like a legit top prospect, dragged this much in an NFL like scouting circle as much as Caleb Williams. As one of the best prospects over the last 20 years, we know the Bears are going to take him, but I don't know if you heard the clip with the Pablo Torres podcast yesterday, but it feels like people just can't let this guy have nice things.
I love that. I mean, yeah, I guess you could make that argument that Caleb Williams has received much more negative noise compared to positive, but there's a reason for that. It's because he is the unquestioned number one quarterback mm-hmm. in this class. And it doesn't really matter what you say about him because he is going to be the first player drafted on Thursday night to the Chicago Bears. And he has the makings of what you want from a franchise quarterback when it comes to being elusive in the pocket, when it comes to making all the throws downfield that you want your QB1 to make. He's good off script. He has that potential to be the franchise guy, which is why Chicago traded him away. Now, I think that, you know, when you have a prospect who has so many high expectations, there's just going to naturally be that negative noise around him because is he going to be able to live up to the hype? Mm-hmm. And what really will determine that, in my opinion, is the situation that the Chicago Bears have created for themselves, whether it's the talent around him, the offensive line, the defense. These are all things that have been improved by general manager Ryan Poles over the past couple of years. But again, it really comes down to the coaching staff when we're talking about a quarterback finding immediate success at the next level, much like C.J. Stroud did with the Houston Texans in 2023.
Do we take anything away from him flying to Detroit with Roma Dunze?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think that he knows Rome pretty well. So that'd be pretty interesting because, of course, Chicago holds that number nine overall pick, and they could be in the market for a wide receiver. Who knows? I know that Roma Dunze is a prospect a lot of teams are really high on. there are just some great wide receivers in this class. And the Chicago Bears at number 9, I think that they have a good chance of potentially moving down, depending on how the draft board falls, because you can acquire extra draft capital. I don't think the Bears have a ton of picks in this upcoming draft, which is something that is notable, because it will definitely lead to Ryan Poles entertaining some of those trade calls. But again, Chicago could have a chance to take the first defensive player off the board, whether that be Jared Verse or Dallas Turner from Alabama. They could also take a wide receiver, as you mentioned. So the Bears, what they have is flexibility with that second first-round pick in the top 10.
Yeah, they only have 4 picks, 2 in the first, 1 in the third, and then 1 in the fourth. So they'll be a quick out if they don't add some of those picks back by maybe trading down and probably getting a good haul for that 9th overall selection. I want to stay focused on the quarterbacks for a little bit here. Jaden Daniels, they say the draft starts at 2. Well, in most years, but I'm thinking it starts more at 3. You think Jaden Daniels will go to Washington? Hopefully that's their franchise quarterback that they've so sorely missed for so long. I think he's my favorite quarterback of the Big 4 heading into this draft, and I think personally Cliff Kingsbury, he's going to have some fun with him.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I'm someone who has been trying to make the case for Drake May, but something happened over the past week that leads me to believe that Jaden Daniels will absolutely be selected number 2 by Washington, and that's that. According to reports from NFL media, the Las Vegas Raiders actually attempted to trade up to number 2 overall. And the natural conclusion is that Antonio Pierce would like to reunite with the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, Jaden Daniels. These are two men who spent, I think, about 3 years together during their time at Arizona State. They went their separate ways, found success on those different paths. And listen, Jaden Daniels, I mean, the first player in at least 60 years to lead the FBS in yards per attempt and yards per rush as well as a quarterback, which is absolutely incredible. As a reigning Heisman Trophy winner, as the guy who had the kind of campaign he did in 2023, you can understand why he's going to go over someone like Drake May. So I'm with you. Maybe the draft starts at number 3. Maybe the draft really starts at number 5, right? We see 3 quarterbacks go off the board. The Cardinals will have a great opportunity to select the first wide receiver in the draft. And we really don't know exactly where J.J. McCarthy's stock is right now. Is he a top 5 pick? Is he more like a top 10 pick? That's what's going to be interesting to see on Thursday night.
And here's where I'm thinking why I say the draft might start at 3, because I don't know how to read this New England team. Obviously, it's Elliott Wolf's New England team now. It's going to be a totally different draft strategy going forward. But I don't believe they're in the position right now as a team. And I know the quarterbacks, they don't grow on trees, and these prospects are as good as they've been in the last few years. But I don't know if they're in the position to be taking potentially Drake May at 3, just given that roster and knowing what else they need to do in this with their roster. Could they not trade out of 3, recoup a bunch of picks, and get, you know, more guys at more key positions? Or do you think New England's going to stay in at 3 and take the quarterback?
So they absolutely could trade down. And in fact, Elliott Wolf has made it clear that the franchise is open for business when it comes to potential trade calls. But again, it takes 2 to tango. So you need to find an offer that's attractive enough for you to move down the draft board and pass on taking one of the top 3 quarterbacks in the draft. So it really comes down to if they find that Godfather offer, if they get that King's ransom. But again, I feel like Washington would have a better chance at getting a better trade offer than the New England Patriots at 3. So it really comes down to just what that offer is going to be. How enticing is it? But if I had to put my money down right now, I'm going to guess that the Patriots stick at number 3 and take their quarterback of the future.
And if that is the next quarterback, it would likely be Drake May. And I know there was one unnamed quarterback coach yesterday that said he wouldn't draft him in the top 10 at all. I know people hated him staying at North Carolina for another year, but really, he's everything you want a quarterback. He's got good size. He's got good foot speed. He's got a hell of an arm. Like, what is it that people aren't liking about Drake May? Is it just that he stayed an extra year?
Yeah, so you talked about Caleb Williams being the quarterback prospect that has received the most negative attention. I think Drake May has a great argument to be the prospect who has received the most negative attention. And I will say this, I mean, it's not even necessarily negative attention, but maybe it's the lack of positive attention, right? Because there's been draft analysts around the league, such as Merrill Hodge, who is someone who I really respect, saying that Drake May is basically a project. I think that's an overstatement, if you will. I think you can use the word project in several different cases, but Drake May has what you want in terms of a franchise signal caller. There are some things that need to be refined in his game. There's no doubt about that. But grabbing him at number three overall is something I certainly would do if I was the New England Patriots. I mean, he had the third most total yards in a two-year span in ACC history. The only guys ahead of him to do that were Deshaun Watson with Clemson and Lamar Jackson with Louisville. So this is a guy who's a bit of a dual-threat athlete, not as much as Jaden Daniels, but again, I think he has the makings of someone who could be a good quarterback in the pocket for years to come for an NFL franchise.
We're talking with Jordan Tijani, NFL writer over at CBSSports.com. The NFL draft gets underway. Round one tomorrow, rounds two and three on Friday, and then the rest on Saturday. Arizona at four, they seem like they could move out, but they feel like they could also just take Marvin Harrison Jr. possibly there. I'm wondering, there's been a lot of love lately for Malik Nabers. How much did the no testing for Marvin Harrison really affect his draft stock? Or people just like, hey, he put it on film. We expect that on Sundays.
So I think that it probably affected his stock in terms of some teams, but overall, I'm going to say none. I mean, this guy is the unquestioned, in my opinion, number one wideout in this class. I love Malik Nabers. There's no doubt about it. He's going to be a top 10 pick. But Marvin Harrison Jr. is a stud, and you can't run away from the DNA.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I think that he can go number four over to the Arizona Cardinals. But I will say this. The more fascinating headline or storyline to come out this week is me trying to speculate on where exactly that first trade is going to take place.
Mm-hmm.
Because if teams like the Denver Broncos, Las Vegas Raiders, and Minnesota Vikings do not find great success negotiating with Jim Harbaugh and the Los Angeles Chargers at five, it's very possible they hit up Monty Austin Ford over in Arizona and trade up to four to grab someone like J.J. McCarthy or Drake May. But again, it really comes down to the team's respective draft board. I'm still questioning if J.J. McCarthy is going to be a top five pick. But if he is, it's going to come down to the Chargers and Cardinals at four and five. And it's very possible, in my mind, that the Chargers get jumped via trade by some team. A quarterback goes number four. And then the Chargers end up sticking and picking, maybe selecting the first offensive lineman off the board as opposed to a wide receiver.
Now, with that, with the possible trading up there, Minnesota and the New York Giants seem to be the most teams. Well, I guess Denver there as well, but I'm wondering if L.A. Chargers would want to do business with a division rival like that. Just, who do you think's got more ammo to move up? Obviously, the Giants, you don't have to fall back that far if you trade with the Giants, but they don't have a second, another second in the first. Minnesota's got two first, but you're trading out of the top 10. Who do you think's going to be the one like, hey, I'd rather take Minnesota's twos than just falling a little bit down and take the Giants, whatever, they're at six, I believe.
Yeah, I will say it's fascinating because according to Diana Rossini of The Athletic, we've had three teams reach out to the Chargers in an attempt to trade up. The Denver Broncos, Las Vegas Raiders, and the Minnesota Vikings. And what's interesting is that two of those three teams are division rivals. So if these teams are trading up for J.J. McCarthy, who is Jim Harbaugh's former college quarterback, would he facilitate a landing spot giving McCarthy to a division rival where he has to play him twice a year for the rest of his coaching days? Of course, we know that every pick has its price, and there's Godfather offers out there potentially, and you know, we could see the Chargers wheel and deal with the division rival. But to answer your question, I feel like it's the Minnesota Vikings because that's the team with two first-round picks in this current draft. And we know there's no beating around the bush here that current first-round picks have more value than future first-round picks because we don't know how teams will fare in 2024. So I would argue it's the Minnesota Vikings who have the best ammunition to move up, and that's exactly why they made that deal with the Houston Texans last month to acquire that extra draft ammunition.
Yeah, I just think, and like with this, like, I don't know, it's a very small connection. I know Peter Schrager brought it up, but like, you know, Jim Harbaugh interviewed with Minnesota. I wonder if there's a little bit of connection there that they'd be willing more to do to deal with the Vikings, but that's semantics. That's whatever. It's you take the best offer available. A guy that might get affected by all this movement and run on quarterbacks and potentially wide receivers is the best tight end in this draft, and I think it's a player that people are going to fall in love with, Brock Bowers. Is there a good landing spot? Does it feel like 10 to the Jets for Aaron Rodgers makes so much sense?
It does make sense, but with the Jets, I've been mocking them in offensive linemen.
Yeah.
I know that the Jets have definitely done their work on the offensive front this offseason. They've done a great job, but in my opinion, the work's not done. They're going to draft an offensive lineman somewhere in this draft. whether that might be Fuaga out of Oregon State, who is a lineman a lot of people consider to be maybe the best in this class, yeah, even over Joe Alt, which is kind of what something that surprised me. But I really do like this guy because I think he's consistent in both the pass and the run protection as well. But, I mean, Brock Bowers to the Jets would be an awesome combination for Aaron Rodgers. The other team I really look at is the Indianapolis Colts because Anthony Richardson is a young quarterback. They don't have a stud tight end, and we know that a good pass-catching tight end can be a young quarterback's best friend. So I think a great fit would be with the Indianapolis Colts. But I will say this. I mean, we've seen some star tight ends come out early in the first round before, such as Kyle Pitts with the Atlanta Falcons, and he hasn't really found that superstar potential that people thought he possessed. And that's because you really have to game plan around these pass catchers. I mean, the tight end position is really tough to play in the NFL. You have to block like a left tackle on first down and catch like a wide receiver on third down, lining up against different defensive backs and linebackers. So with Brock Bowers, he's not exactly a guy who's going to be a mauler in the blocking game, in my opinion. He's going to be more that pass catcher, the versatile guy who you can line up outside, inside in different spots and have fun with your offense. His best landing spot is with the offensive coaching staff that is going to truly game plan around him, get him his touches, and find a way for him to be immediately effective at the next level. Mm. And trust me, that's something that coaching staff will have to focus on with the young tight end.
There's the top three wide receivers in this draft, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and then Rome Odunze. That fourth receiver spot, that's the one that people are kind of like wondering, okay, maybe this is the guy for Buffalo. Is it Brian Thomas? Is it Xavier Worthy? Is there a guy, that fourth receiver that you're pinning your eyes on that, hey, he might be a guy that would be that fourth guy?
Yeah, I'm absolutely locked into Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU. I think he's definitely going to be the fourth wide receiver taken. I think it gets really interesting to see where exactly he's going to fall, though. I mean, it's going to be after pick 10. It might be after pick 15 as well. So are the Jaguars at 17 an interesting landing spot? The Pittsburgh Steelers reportedly really like him as well. They might have to make a slight trade up. Then there's the Cincinnati Bengals sitting there at 18, right? And T. Higgins, is he on the trade block? Is he not on the trade block? Getting yet another LSU Tiger into that room would be a pretty interesting fit as well. Brian Thomas is definitely wide receiver four for me in this class.
And you brought up T. Higgins there. Do we see maybe a move of one of these veteran receivers? I know Brandon Ayuk's name is out there. I mentioned T. Higgins. I know Cortland Sutton's been getting a little calls from Denver as well. But do you think one of the receivers, the bigger names, Ayuk or Higgins, gets moved here this weekend?
I want to say yes, just because it would be dramatic. And the draft, of course, is always unpredictable. But, you know, I wrote a column for CBS Sports trying to buy and sell the biggest draft rumors. And when it came to Brandon Ayuk, for example, I'm selling that the 49ers eventually move him. But we did see a report from Michael Silver yesterday saying that, you know, this situation is up in the air. If they find the right cost, which is a first-round pick, according to the 49ers, then they could potentially move off of Brandon Ayuk. So, again, the situation is very much up in the air. As for T. Higgins, that's really interesting as well because I've maintained that I don't think he's necessarily in the long-term plans of the Bengals. Financially, when you look at the contract they gave to Joe Burrow, the looming extension for Ja'Marr Chase as well, I was really thinking that T. Higgins could potentially leave in free agency before he was slapped with the franchise tag. So, again, he's going to be someone to keep an eye on in the first round as well. I don't know if he necessarily gets moved. Cortland Sutton for the Denver Broncos, a veteran wide receiver, a team that's yet again undergoing a shift in offensive ideology with a new quarterback coming in. Cortland Sutton was great for Russell Wilson and Sean Payton last year, but he's someone who absolutely is on the trade block, in my opinion, especially when you consider the fact that the Broncos would probably like to move up for a quarterback.
And then in your neck of the woods there, Nashville, Tennessee, the Titans, it feels like, hey, just don't overthink it. Take Joe Alt.
Yeah, you know, I went from, yeah, I really like Joe Alt to praying that he's still available at number 7 overall because the Chargers at number 5 really scare me. We know that Jim Harbaugh likes his offensive linemen. In my opinion, Joe Alt's the top guy in this class, and I actually talked with him just last week, and I was really impressed with how technical the conversation got. He seems like he's a cerebral player. He seems like someone who's going to be a starter in this league for a long time. So if Tennessee escapes the first round with Joe Alt at number 7, I'd be a huge fan of that for sure.
Ed, around draft season, we always get the new uniforms and whatnot around the league. You know, Denver got a new look. Houston got a new look. Detroit, they also got a new look. Any of the Jets as well. What are the new looks? Who's your favorite?
I got to say the Houston Texans.
Oh, they're
right?
Beautiful.
It seems like they're doing everything right, right? They got their great new head coach in DeMeco Ryans. They got C.J. Stroud, offensive coordinator Bobby Slowick, a stud, going to be a head coach next year. And now they look sexy as ever with these new uniforms. I absolutely love the alternates that Houston pulled out. I cannot say the same for the Denver Broncos, though. Mm. I'm not a fan of their new uniforms. They kind of look like UTEP, in my opinion, out of the college ranks. But they did do a great job with the throwbacks, right? They released the new throwbacks after they released their new standard uniforms, and throwbacks look absolutely phenomenal. Those should be the uniforms, yep, the threads that they're rocking week in, week out, in my opinion. Yeah, when it comes to Denver's new uniforms, I'm starting to wonder if they're going to have yet another uniform change in a couple of years down the line here.
Well, I credit the NFL for so long. It was like, no, you can't have it. You only one helmet. The alternate looks were terrible. And now, hey, have at it. Looks like college teams out there. Rumors that the Packers are going to have a white helmet soon, maybe Minnesota as well. So, yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool things around the league. It's a great looking league. It's a great looking off season. Can't wait for tomorrow night. Enjoy it, Jordan. We'll hopefully talk to you soon here before we get to the season.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
There you go, Jordan DeJani, NFL writer for CBSSports.com. Check out his work over at CBSSports.com. He does great NFL writing there. NFL draft underway tomorrow. I believe it's a 5:30 start Calgary time. They got it all set up there in Detroit. Now, the NFL draft, ever since they started going to different destinations, they were in Kansas City, I believe, last year. But next year, they're going to Lambeau Field in Green Bay. Would be the smallest place to host the draft. It'll be crazy. Be over 100,000 people just descending on Green Bay. It'll be pretty cool. But, yeah, draft gets underway tomorrow. Chicago Bears on the clock, likely to be taking quarterback Caleb Williams out of USC. And Jordan joined us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, and steaks and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. Around the corner, we'll get you set for the night ahead. Day 5 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Jays look to right their series with the Kansas City Royals and just a couple games in the NBA playoffs as well. That's next as Big Show Hour 4 continues here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Welcome back. Big Show Hour 4 live from the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Want to get Hour 3 of the Big Show? Well, you can get it wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Spotify, Google. They're already up there. We had some good chats today with Ben Nicholson-Smith. Of course, Brent Cron joined us at 8 o'clock, and the interview with Jordan DeJani will be up in just a little while as well. It is day 5 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. 3 games to whet your appetite tonight. Starting in Toronto, the series tied at 1. You can find it on Sportsnet and the CBC. Hockey Central starts at 4:30. William Nylander doesn't look like he's going to play tonight. He was out there for skating around, but he was not doing any drills. He's just in his own little area with skating with another scratch in Noah Gregor. So it looks like he's going to be with the Leafs will be without William Nylander for a third straight game.
Have we ever been told what was the original cause for any sort of injury that he's had? Has they said anything like vague, like lower body or
they haven't said any, I don't think they've said a single area of where he's hurt. Was some video floating around that he took a high hit against Tampa Bay in game 82.
Is it a head injury?
I don't think it's head. I don't know. I don't want to assume, but it is kind of weird. And I guess, you know what? In the postseason, you're not going to find out anything.
Yeah.
Like they say Thatcher Demko, it's an injury that's not related to his last one.
Mm-hmm.
It is getting weird though here,
Because it is the playoffs, man. You know, if it's serious, then fine, get healthy and all that. But you know, if it's not that bad, come on.
He hasn't been officially ruled out. I totally get you.
Matthew Tkachuk was trying to play with a cracked sternum last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mark Stone playing through all these injuries.
Yeah. No,
air
I get
quote
you.
Injuries.
I get you.
No, I don't want to go.
Well, no. He was hurt for a while.
Hurt.
He was put on LTIR.
Yes.
Nylander played all 82.
Mm-hmm.
Sheldon Keefe did say after practice, there is a chance Nylander plays tonight. Will depend on how he responds to the extra work.
Matthews didn't skate at practice either, but he was just
getting
some rest.
Yeah, he is. Matthews is good to go. Looks like it I don't know, but there's going to be much lineup changes. I don't think he changed the lineup after a nice win
nope.
that the Leafs had.
So absolutely not.
The same lineup, Ely Samsonov between the pipes, and go back to Jeremy Swayman between the pipes with the Boston Bruins. This series, like I said, it does shift to Toronto tonight. I wonder how that crowd's going to react. Like I said it with that first 5 minutes tonight is going to be so fascinating for Toronto.
Yeah.
They just need to get your feet wet. Just get in there. Don't let Boston roll you.
You got to play brain dead hockey.
Yeah.
Just get it in deep, kind of get through the lineup one or two times. Everyone get a couple minutes under their belt. Hopefully you can maybe have one or two scoring chances within those first couple minutes and just keep it really safe, smart, and simple in your own end and not let Boston just kind of run away with things because they've gotten off to good starts in all of these games.
Yeah, and Bruins will be without one of their defensemen in Andrew Peak, so they've recalled prospect Mason Lowry. So it looks like he'll make his Stanley Cup playoff debut tonight for the Bruins, but that's a tough loss. Andrew Peak was a trade deadline acquisition for the Bruins. He's filled in well there in their bottom pair defense-wise, but yeah, this Bruins team, it's still a good team, but this series, I'm not sold on either group. I think it can go either way, and I don't think the winner of Game 3 decides much of this series.
Really? This series feels very reminiscent of the series we saw last year for the Maple Leafs with the Tampa Bay Lightning, where the Leafs get blown out, and then they come back.
And they roll them.
Yeah, they rolled. They didn't roll Boston in the last game, but it was a really good effort last year. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it was a really good effort out of Toronto, a much-needed effort. Yeah. And Austin Matthews was the leading charge and the leading driver in that game. The top-end talent for Toronto, I would give the edge to them over the Boston Bruins here. They need to be damn good. They were good in that opening series against Tampa last year. The core five was a big part of the reason why they got back into that series. They need to be the drivers. I think if they're able to do that on home ice here, I think this game three could be a big turning point for Toronto.
And you don't need to know. I mean, yeah, it is the Toronto Sun, but go look at the cover of the Toronto Sun today, and it's an invisible man, Mitch Marner. They're really feeling that. Steve Simmons really driving that point home there.
Yeah.
But as the Bruins and the Leafs game three tonight from the Scotiabank Arena, Sportsnet and the CBC have you covered there. 7:50 puck drop in this one. I don't know if it's 7:50, but it's a 7:50 start for the Vegas Golden Knights and the Dallas Stars. Vegas, they got off to a super, super quick start there in game one. Nobody liked it.
No,
nobody likes seeing Mark Stone.
It's so interesting.
To a lesser extent, Thomas Hurdle score.
Yeah, when Vegas first came into the league, I thought they were a pretty lovable team. You know, a bunch of misfits.
Yeah, they rolled with it.
Yeah, a bunch of guys that found new homes, and they went to the Stanley Cup final, and you're like, wow, this is an amazing story, right? I could get behind a team like Vegas. And now they've a total heel turn.
They got a taste.
They are the biggest villain in the NHL right now.
They are.
And for good reason.
They are. They were within the rules of the NHL. This is the NHL's own doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we could talk about this forever, but it's an old story. Vegas is still a good team, and they are even better now that they have their captain in the fold and Thomas Hurdle as well. I worry about their goaltending a little bit. Can Logan Thompson be solid? Do they have to go to A&M? I worry about the goaltending in this series because Jake Oettinger was not great in game one either.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like maybe Bruce Cassidy is kind of just waiting for Aiden Hill to be like, give him the go-ahead that he's good to go back into this series. I think Cassidy trusts Hill a bit more, and rightfully so. He won you a Stanley Cup last year. So I'm kind of serious to see how short or long the leash is for Thompson in this series too, when Hill is healthy. But, yeah.
Yeah, no, I it's totally fair. The Stars, this is a good group. I think they can, I don't think they played much like themselves there in game one. I don't know if it was just the shock factor and of just, you know, you're playing the Stanley Cup champion who beat you up pretty good there in the Western Conference final. But yeah, I love the point that Brent Caron brought up there with us. Like, really, you go back to that series against Calgary with Jake Oettinger where he was so good. But then the playoff matchups that he's had since then, I know they get to the Western Conference final last year, not as solid. I think, you know, but I think Pete team's got more of a read on the guy.
Yeah.
And he's got to work through that and change his style of play. They'll still think he's a great goaltender and he'll be all right. But that series is certainly one to watch. But I worry about Dallas if they go down 2-0.
Yeah.
If Vegas goes up 2-0 heading back home.
I mean, It's such a reoccurring theme in the NHL that it's so hard to be that consistent for 82 games in a row and then carry it over into the playoffs. Like, the Boston Bruins had a historically good season last year.
Mm-hmm.
They get bounced by the worst team in the playoffs, the Florida Panthers, and they go on to move on to the Stanley Cup final and all of that. So it's so hard to just keep that momentum going, because eventually – you got to hit some sort of a slump, some sort of adversity. It happens for every team. Mm-hmm. And the playoffs in hockey, maybe more than any other sport, maybe baseball, it's just about getting hot and peaking at the right time. And yeah, Dallas, you got to find a way to even up this series. So
yeah,
it's home ice for a reason. And Vegas is a tough place to play in too, man, boy.
That's one of the harder barns to play in nowadays. That goes at 7:50. You can find that one on Sportsnet 360. 8 o'clock. Closer to probably 8:20, puck drop up in Edmonton. We'll have this one for you right here on Sportsnet. No, we won't. We're actually going to Calgary Wranglers hockey today, mm-hmm. taking on the Tucson Roadrunners in game one of their Western Conference wild card series. I don't know. AHL playoffs are weird.
Pacific, like, play-in.
Pacific
kind of
play-in.
First round? I don't know.
Winner gets Coachella Valley.
Yes.
Here we go. The lowest seed.
Tough mountain to climb for the Wranglers here. Roadrunners are a good team.
Yes, they are a very good team. Wranglers will be getting all their guys back. Dustin Wolf, Jacob Peltier is obviously
already been there. Coronado's down there.
Coronado's down there. Klapka. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be fun. 8 o'clock tonight with Sandra Priscilla.
Hoping to get a game here in Calgary in this series.
Yeah.
It is best 2-3.
They got to win the series. They got to win the series, and then they'll be Coachella Valley, right?
Yeah.
That would be the team they'd face if they want to get it back to Calgary here. But, Ed, Oilers and Kings tonight. Watch this one on Sportsnet. Edmonton, they did everything they had to do in game one. That was a pretty perfect game. If you're the Edmonton Oilers,
yeah.
Connor McDavid, 5 points. Zach Hyman, 4 points and a hat trick. It feels like it's tough sledding right here for LA after game
Kings
one.
Kings don't have an answer for the Edmonton Oilers
now. They don't have, the Oilers are
they don't got the high-end
talent. Yeah, the Kings don't have the goaltending. I don't think they have the horses, talent wise, to high end talent to get it done as good as Kopitar.
And everyone wants to talk
Dano
about
and,
yeah, everyone and wants
Kempe
to talk about
had
their,
a 40 goal mm-hmm. season.
Everyone wants to talk about their center depth. I don't care how deep your centermen are. Mm-hmm. You can't stop McDavid. You can only contain him. That's the best you can do.
Yeah,
and if he wants to go to that next level, that McJesus level that we saw in game one there,
he will.
You're not going to stop him.
And that's the thing. We're amazed by Auston Matthews' 3-point night that he had, and then he needed that for his psyche, for his career, and how we think about him. And with Connor McDavid, it's like, yeah, I'm the greatest player in the regular season, and I can just be so much better when the lights are on right now. And I know that's game one. And
McDavid had 100 assists. This wasn't even the best McDavid we've seen.
It wasn't even the McDavid's best season. And yeah, exactly. He had 100 freaking assists.
Like, he's turning into like the LeBron James of the NHL, where like, I don't care about the regular season.
Yep.
Just get me to the playoffs and then I'll show you who really is the best player in the world.
Yeah. And I know everybody's like, hey, it only matters if you win a Stanley Cup. Right now, this might be the Oilers' best run here at a Stanley Cup.
And the Oilers,
the way it sets up,
they want this to be a quick series.
They get through LA. You potentially, we don't know what Vancouver's going to got. What is Vancouver without Thatcher Demko? Can they beat Nashville?
Yeah, I mean, those are going to be tough games. I think it's going to be a 6 or 7 series without Thatcher Demko.
So Oilers get through there. They potentially, you know, they get a weakened Vancouver or, you know, maybe a not-so-good Vancouver, maybe even Nashville in round two.
Mm-hmm.
Figure they're the favorites there. And then in the third round, you'll get the whatever team is left out of Dallas, Vegas, Colorado, Winnipeg after they beat the crap out of one another.
That's just an absolute gauntlet coming out of that central division there.
Sorry, guys. I know it's Southern Alberta. You don't want to hear this. Oilers are a good team. This might be a good run for them to get to a cup final right now.
Yes.
I know it's only game one. They look really good in game one. They could absolutely look like crap tonight.
And the Oilers have those games in their back
pocket.
They
do have those games where they can completely sleep.
Remember when they were brutal to start the year, and that's a big part of the reason why Woodcroft isn't their coach anymore.
Yeah.
And they've had a couple other slumps here or there, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, I know that they still like to get flack on their goaltending. I think Stuart Skinner has proven himself to be a decent goaltender in the NHL, a starting worthy goalie in the NHL.
He's just got to be Kemper Francouz, right?
Yep.
That's all he has to be.
I agree.
He does not have to be Patrick Waugh. And then that'll do it for the Stanley Cup story tonight. Oilers and Kings, that'll be the final game tonight. 8:20, close to puck drop, 8:20. There, Oilers up 1-0 in that series as well. Want to quickly here, before we get out of here, the Blue Jays, they try to get back in the win column. Game 3 of 4 down in Kansas City, 5:40 first pitch. It'd be Yuriel Rodriguez up against Alec Marsh. I know it was a tough one for the Jays last night. You can pin that one on Vladdy all you want. I still think this team needs to score a lot more than just, you know, 5 runs here and now. But hey, I will say that. You get 5 runs most of the time, especially in the regular season. You're going to win more games than you don't in baseball, but it has to be a more consistent basis. They need to see, like, I think the people, why people have such a problem with this Jays group is because they're seeing who is getting the offense.
Yeah.
It's Dalton Varsho. It's Danny Jansen.
Well, Dalton Varsho is a big positive for them because you gave up a huge prospect for him. But
we all want to, see Dalton Varsho do good, but it's like George Springer's awful.
Yes.
Holy crap. Jeff Blair, he was on with us in the offseason, and he said they should try to find a buyer for this contract right now, because he is not the same George Springer as he was even a few couple years ago with Toronto. He's a liability leading off your offense. Table set
it's
with
an
him.
Automatic out to start the game.
When your table setters are not doing the job, Springer, Vladdy, Bo, it puts so much pressure on the guys that aren't so much expected to get the offense.
Yeah.
And that's why this Jays team,
you want IKF to drive in 90 runs this year? Give me a break. Justin Turner's been really good.
Justin Turner's been one of the best.
He's an old veteran.
But he feels like a guy he gets better as he ages. He's coming off of his career year. He's coming off his best season.
Sure.
But that's what I think. If Vlad was going, if Bo was fully going, like Vlad, one extra base hit in his last 51 at bats.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure that was a home run.
Yeah, was it the Tampa home run?
No, it was. I think he's had more at bats, but I think it's probably his last home run that he hit.
Yeah.
Was the last extra base hit that he's had.
Jeez.
We could talk, he can hit 110, 115 mile per hour. Yeah, but if it's into the freaking second baseman's glove half the time, you're not doing it, and that's why I think the frustration is with this Blue Jays team, and it feels like it will ruin another great pitching performance by this team this year, because the starters are good, the bullpen is good.
Yeah,
it feels like the offense is going to let them down come, you know, a wild card series.
Yeah, and that's such a shame, because when it comes to the postseason, where do you need your most depth? Where do you need the most consistent play? It's out of the guys
like
on the bump. You need fantastic pitching, but if you can't back it up with any sort of run support, you're not going to win any games.
You need to hit the home run in the postseason. You need to hit the bloop and the blast to win games in the postseason, and that's where the Jays have trouble with.
Mm-hmm.
They can get 5 runs. Can they win, you know, like if they get into a shootout? Like that the game they blew to the Yankees there where they had a chance to sweep. Yeah. They lose 9-8. They just don't have the goats right now to keep it up with a top offense like a Yankees, like an Orioles. Like, we haven't even played the Orioles yet in this division. I'm terrified.
Yeah.
Once they get to Baltimore and what they can do. And just 2 games in the NBA tonight as well. The Boston Celtics in game 2 host the Miami Heat.
Celtics are going to run away with this series.
Yeah, no Jimmy Butler.
They're a minus 1,200 favorite today.
Tonight they're minus 1,200?
Yes. I think I saw that.
Oh my God! The Heat were in the finals last year.
Yes, minus 1,200 for Celtics money line.
Wow! You make some money if you want to bet on the Heat.
Spread is at like 15.5. That's crazy for a playoff game.
Well, I mean, everybody's built Boston up. Like, hey, can you beat Denver?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much it. Can you beat Denver?
I mean, I had a guy on last week, Kai Gambage, NBA writer for Sportsnet, and I was kind of asking him, like, you know, kind of comparing them to some hockey teams that are like, who needs to make a finals here? Who needs to get a ring? Like, the Boston Celtics have made an NBA finals when they lost to Golden State a couple years back, but like
this era with this of core, Celtics team, like they haven't won since 08.
Yeah, like this core needs to get over the hump. They need to get a ring because they've been damn good. They've been the team in the East for so many years now.
For just as long as I can remember, the Celtics have been the team in these, just with different iterations of players. And I know they went through a little bit of a rebuild with all the picks they got from Brooklyn built this team that they have
now.
The
Kyrie era didn't really work out where he couldn't be their number one guy. You know, he's been, you know, blowing up, getting himself out of situations for God
forever.
Knows how long.
That's all he knows how to do.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Jason Tatum is an elite superstar, could be an MVP candidate. Yep. Jaylen Brown is awesome. Like, mm-hmm.
Well, that's the race.
They need to get to the finals.
Face of the NBA over the next 5 years. Who do you take, Anthony Edwards or Jason Tatum?
Either or. You know, I'd probably lean Tatum, but
just because he's done a little, he's got a little bit more of the cachet underneath him. He's done it
a little more. Yeah, but I think he's just in a better situation to win a championship too.
Fair. Yeah. And then the last game, 7:30, New Orleans and Oklahoma City. No Zion. He says he hopes to return at some point in the postseason, but the Pelicans probably need to go on a little bit of a longer run. They did give OKC a run there in game one. Yeah. I wonder if that inexperience for the Thunder. And this was kind of brought
up. They need
to
shoot the lights out from three, the Pelicans, if they want any chance in this series. Because, like, you know, SGA is going to have a lot of time with the ball, and it's not like he's excellent from three. He's a lot of mid-range, a lot of get-his-own-shot type guy.
Yeah.
So, like, McCollum's going to have a huge series. Ingram's going to have to be sharp from three as well if they're going to have any chance with OKC, I feel, because they're deep as well.
Yeah, they are deep. That'll be at 7:30, just two games in the NBA, but three in the NHL. All of those can be found on the Sportsnet family of channels. I want to thank all of our guests, Ben Nicholson-Smith, Brent Cron, Jordan DeJani. Those interviews are up on our Spotify, Google, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to GVP for making us sound oh so good. The Jeff Merrick Show is up next, 10:35. Peter Baugh from The Athletic talking a little Avalanche. At 11 o'clock, Greg Wyshynski from ESPN for a little Merrick versus Wyshynski. And 11:35, Jason Greger talking some Oilers. A big one for the Edmonton Oilers tonight as they take on the Kings in game at number two. That'll do it for us. We'll be back tomorrow. Keep it locked right here. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.